All right, everybody. Welcome to Coffee Talk, where the people that provided you, that have been on site all week long, providing you all the content for UFC 244, sit down and just have a little casual chat over some coffee and water.
This is sparkling black cherry water, sir.
Okay. So we're just going to discuss our week and sort of everything that happened for this UFC 244 card. It was a fun week. It was a very interesting one. I'm still in awe of the fact that this was such a big fight, probably the biggest fight of the year, yet there wasn't a real championship fight on the line. We weren't seeing the two best welterweights fighting, but nonetheless, it felt huge.
Yeah, but we've known this for a while. Title fights don't mean shit, basically, yeah. Unless if you give a shit about who's fighting. I mean, the biggest pay-per-view is Conor and Nate. Conor and Nate, too.
But,
non-title fight. So the fact that it's the biggest fight isn't a surprise, mm-hmm. But it just kind of goes back to the point that, you know, the fighters matter.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. But it for a while it felt like, and this applies to many other aspects when we talk about Conor McGregor. You know, those rules, it's just a Conor McGregor rule. Like, yeah, it was the biggest fight, but it was because of Conor McGregor, right? This, and that. For the first time, we're actually seeing this bleed out outside of Conor McGregor. Like, all of a sudden, you know, personalities matter, right? And this is really what came down to two of the biggest personalities in the game, BMF.
Yeah, the UFC really needed this in terms of, like, getting someone that wasn't Conor to become a star. And Nate's been that person for a while, I guess. But he's been out for 3 years up until that Pettis fight. So it was nice to see it. It was nice to see him back and just out. He kept repeating last night at the press conference that he's tired of making names for other people.
Yeah.
And I kind of get that. I understand what he was saying in terms of, because this show really did manifest because he wanted it to happen. And then it happened.
Yeah.
And Nate was the one that willed this into existence.
Yeah.
And now the UFC copywrote pretty much everything he said. And now they're making money off of it, which he said was funny.
And I'm just curious, what do you guys think about Masvidal? Because it seems that Conor McGregor's in the money weight division, right? Nate Diaz is in the money weight division. But when I look at Masvidal, he kind of gives me the vibe of both. Like, that was a world-class performance. Like, I legit see a contender right there that could potentially get the welterweight title, but I also see somebody that can just be in fun fights. He's in a weird two dimensions, it feels like.
I mean, Masvidal's performance, definitely, without a doubt. I don't know if you would necessarily favor him over, say, Usman. I'll probably favor him over Colby for sure, but over Usman, maybe. I'm not sure, honestly. Mm-hmm. But he's absolutely as competitive with all those guys. So, yeah, he could win. So, and Nate, like, you probably don't think he could win those fights, but also, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Nate doesn't seem to care. I don't think the fans really care.
He doesn't care about belts.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that's the big difference. I noticed that, actually. Nate is very open about, like, belts are stupid.
He didn't care about the BMF title.
I am the champ, yeah. Already,
belts ruin fights, he said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, belts ruin the fight game.
Yeah, and George Jorge, sorry, go back to George every once in a while. I think he used to train at George Santiago.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So that always confused me.
It was always spelled this. It's spelled.
Yeah,
the same.
Maybe it's a Brazil.
Yeah, it's Brazilian. Yeah, they still say George.
But Jorge, he seems like when the idea of the rematch came up. He kind of was a bit dismissive, didn't you, Phil?
Jorge?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think obviously in the octagon, when the fight was waved off, I think he was 100% like, we'll run it back, like, let's do it. But then I think when he saw the cut and he heard Dana White's comments, maybe that kind of...
Well, I think also the promise of that title fight.
Yeah.
You know, because he does actually, now he is closer because it was such a great performance. He did look really good. So I think that actually... He does seem like someone you would actually consider for the title. I would actually love to see 100%. Him in the welterweight picture.
Against Usman or Covington, I'm like, I don't know. I might favor, you know, Usman, maybe even Covington, but it's still a fight that I'm not really sure what's going to happen. Whereas Diaz or Conor McGregor, I'm pretty sure they're not going to, you know, reign the welterweight division anytime soon.
Yeah.
But
I think, with just going back to the cut real quick, I think Nate's going to be out. He'll have to be out for at least... Yeah. 6 months, more like 8 to 9 months at least. And that's assuming everything goes perfect.
Yeah.
Because that cut is just, that's just, it doesn't even matter. He could be dominating a fight, but like you said, you sneeze on that cut, it's gonna blow up again. So,
and even then, even if he takes a long layoff, which he should, that's gonna be a recurring problem moving forward. Yeah. I mean, you put out we put out a graphic on MAFighting.com mm-hmm. on our social platforms where it was comparing the mm-hmm. Pettis cut versus this cut. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
it's really the same thing.
He got it from the same thing, but this one opened up more this time because it also opened up underneath his cheek a little bit more.
But the stoppage was for this one, not
the stoppage was for this one, for sure. But that was what we're saying. If he needs plastic surgery, all the stuff, that's all going to take more time.
Yeah.
Plus, we actually don't know. He mentioned that he had a knee injury.
Yeah,
that was nice. And we actually don't know how serious that is.
He couldn't run.
Yeah.
Because that was his thing, so he couldn't rely on his cardio.
Yeah.
Of all the Nate fights and Nate post-fight interviews and scrums I've ever heard, the thing that surprised me the most what he said was I've never heard him talk about confidence. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he actually said he didn't feel confident mm-hmm. in his cardio, which is like, I don't know, it was actually kind of weird, not weird, but hearing Nate say, mm-hmm. hearing Nate actually talk like a fighter in that sense, because mm-hmm. a strategic fighter rather than like, I want to fight, but him saying, no, I had to pace myself. I couldn't go, like he said, I usually can go like 95% the whole fight.
Yeah.
But he had to go in like spurts.
Yeah.
So,
and we saw that. We saw him catch a beating and then all of a sudden kind of come back a little bit and had a little bit of offense. And yeah, that's a great point because it just kind of highlights how important cardio is to the Diaz brothers and mm-hmm. to Nate because that's such a key element to their game. He can be a little bit out of shape, right? There could be other things going on, but cardio is the thing that, like, look, if I'm not stepping into the fight with cardio.
Cardio, it's his weapon.
Cardio is a weapon in MMA, and that's their main weapon. And, he came in there for, a disadvantage. Yeah.
So let's quickly discuss, I think the initial reaction for the cut, as soon as the fight was stopped, was like, what are you doing? We've seen much worse. But I've seen a lot of pictures surface since we heard Dana White's comments. And I don't know, it kind of changed my mind over the last few hours since I last saw you guys. What do you guys think?
Okay, before we talk about the cut, I want to recreate your actual reaction when the ref was like this. What was your feel, man? Like,
so
it was kind of like, where were you when they stopped that fight?
I was staring at a little TV in the media room. I believe I was drinking... Sprite might have been, but as soon as the fight was stopped, it was just like I was live tweeting it and for MMA Fighting, and I was just like, I had to kind of catch myself. I was like, does this really just happen? Like, oh man, this is like worst case scenario, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody in the media room was kind of like, oh, but look, I think emotions were so high. It was a good fight. It was a fight where you're kind of on the edge of your seat. Mm-hmm. That when something like that happens, the first thing you do is just throw your hands up in the air and be like, what the hell, ref, right? Or doctor.
Yeah.
But in this case, like now with a more sober perspective and after seeing those pictures, I feel different about it. I kind of feel like it was a good call. I don't know.
I laughed uncontrollably when it happened.
You were cage side.
I could not stop laughing.
So, I
was like, oh, knee.
So you were the closest person to it.
That's right.
You were about...
I was like 3 feet behind.
Yeah, 3 feet behind her.
Like, I could not stop laughing. I was like, this makes sense. What I audibly said. I was like, this makes a lot of sense right now.
It's unfortunately just one of those things that you think just is going to happen.
Because
it feels like we don't deserve nice things.
I talk about the A-side all the time that I always think something terrible is going to happen. Always. Like in life. And when that happened, I was like, this just makes sense. This feels right. Not that I was happy that it happened, but I'm like, of course this would happen.
In
the BMF championship. Yeah. Like if it happened in the Akeem Dawodo Julio Arce fight, I would be like, well, that's a bummer for that fight. But because it's the BMF championship of the world, to be like, yeah, we deserve this right now.
Yeah.
Oh.
It did feel a little bit like, is it because we don't deserve nice things?
Yeah,
100%. But however, actually at that moment, I was actually pretty bummed. I was very upset because I was on Nate's corner side. So mm-hmm. when the doctor came over and looked at him and then Nate, like they were kind of talking and then Nate kind of like thumbs up and the doctor gave him a thumbs up, they were kind of like, okay. So at that point, I stopped taking pictures of that situation because I thought it was over. I was like, okay, cool. It's all right. They're mm-hmm. gonna let it go like one more round.
Yeah.
And then that's why when they ended it, I was like, what? Because it just seemed like 5 minutes ago they were, couple seconds ago, it was fine. That's why it seemed weird.
Didn't the doctor come twice? It felt like he kind of went away, and then we're like, okay, yeah, we're good. And then he came back, and he's like, no.
Right? I don't remember if the doctor was in there while the cutman was working. I think he came after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually they let the cut guy work, and then as soon as they start the round, before the round starts, then the ref will be like, all right, doc, come in, which is normal. They should take a look, but I mean, come on, we've been in this game for 15 years. I mean, I don't know, you know, you guys have been working MMA a long time. 12 years. it was just like, man, we know we've seen worse cuts, and like, it's just... I'm like, we're 24 hours removed? Not even 24 hours removed. Like, eight, whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm still, like, I'm just still bummed. I still think it was a crap stoppage.
Bummerville.
Bummerville.
Yeah, it was, the ending was disappointing, for sure. But I want to ask you something, because you did mention something interesting. You were shooting from Nate's corner?
Yeah.
So a lot of the talk was like, dude, Nate was getting smoked. Like, there was no way he was coming back. But then if you actually, like, hear what he was saying, it kind of, and then again, just a quick parenthesis, kind of like when people were like, oh, Khabib versus Nate Diaz, and you're like, nah, like, that doesn't even make sense. But then you hear Nate Diaz talk about how he slapped Khabib and sort of how he sees things and his perspective. You're like, wait a minute, that fight, all of a sudden you start kind of, you know, liking the idea a little better. When he was talking about the fight with Masvidal and the way his perspective, if he felt like he was coming back and he was like, I was in my corner, I was staring at him in between rounds, he was tired, we kept talking all the time and we saw that from the media room, and then he was talking out of breath. In your opinion, how did that look? How did that scene look? And do you share his like perspective at all?
Yeah, so I could hear, when he said that his corner was panicking a little bit and he was telling them to chill, I could hear that panic because the cut was very big and they were trying to rinse it out and there was just kind of like blood and like bloody water like just shooting off his face. But he was just kind of like, he was like, whatever. He was very calm.
Yeah.
He was totally calm. I was trying to get photos of him in the corner and he was just like, totally didn't care what was going on. He was
blood
just
kind of
like,
hurt.
Yeah, blood don't hurt. He was just kind of looking over, like, whatever, I'm cool. And everyone else around him was, like, panicking, but he actually did seem like he was in a good mood. Plus, after the second and third round, he came back and he was, like, pumped. Because I think each round that passed, he felt better.
Yeah.
So, I actually, it's hard to say because I don't know that he's come back from a fight like that, but I just know that like the fourth round against Connor in that second one.
Yeah.
So he does have, we do know that he is stronger in the later rounds.
And he did lose that first round to Pettis.
Yeah.
And then he came back.
He lost, I thought he lost it pretty significantly the first round against Pettis. That's why he got his face cut open.
And then he beat the soul out of Pettis in the final, like,
yeah, two rounds. He got his ass kicked in the first
and
round.
And the first Connor one.
He
was getting worked. And then he came back once his cardio kicked in and the volume started adding up.
He lost the first round to Michael Johnson when he fought Michael Johnson. Outside of maybe the final Gray Maynard fight, I can't think of Nate having a strong first round.
Yeah.
I get worried that he's measuring punches with his face.
He's making $1 million paychecks doing that. So it's
the last. You talking about the last Gray Maynard fight when he TKO'd him?
That's really the only time I really can recall Nate coming out like guns blazing.
And that's one of the things against the Pettis fight. He knew when he was coming back. Like, sure, his brand is big, but he knew a win was important. So he made adjustments in that camp for him to, like, be strong right off the bat.
Yeah.
And everybody acknowledged it. Even Masvidal was like, well, I'm surprised this dude swing this often and this hard that early. So it seems that all the fans, it seems at least all the media, right after the event, wanted the rematch. How do you guys feel about it now, a few hours removed?
I still want the rematch.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, okay, I think we all can agree on that. What about immediate rematch?
Yeah, I still want the immediate rematch.
I don't want the immediate rematch only because of the recovery from the...
Well, Jorge needs his hands fixed anyway, so they're both going to be on the shelf.
Yeah. Jorge sounds like he said he's definitely taking the rest of the year off, but that's only like 3 months.
Neither of them wanted to fight for the rest of 2019. Like, they wanted to fight in 2020.
Well, we're already in November, so there's only 2 months left.
Yeah.
And the supposed Conor pay-per-view is January 18th. None of them will be ready for that.
Neither of them.
No.
Yeah.
I think you could throw enough... They could throw enough money at Jorge for that. I mean, Nate actually can't make that fight now. There's no, it's just no way.
With the possible knee injury.
Yeah, and that, so Nate's out of that running. So possibly Jorge.
Jorge said after his Ben Askren fight, he didn't want to fight for the rest of the year. Yeah. He wanted to take July through December off to heal his hands, and they made him a huge offer, so he fought in November because they needed someone. Yeah. So we wouldn't even, this fight probably wouldn't even have happened if they didn't need a, in 2019, if they didn't need a headline for MSG. So if Jorge fought with two badly injured hands, he could be on the shelf for the summer too.
Yeah, because he seen, don't know.
People were like, I'm not fighting, I need to fix both of my hands. So if he needs to heal his hands, Nate needs to heal his eyebrow, they could be on the same timeline in terms of coming back.
They could be, but also I think that the welterweight title picture is going to, mm-hmm. Maybe play a factor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's actually timing wise would be perfect in terms whoever wins in December. That actually makes sense.
International Fight Week.
Yeah, kind of a defense, and the International Fight Week would be the next defense of that title.
Yeah.
Can we just agree that the rematch should not be anywhere near New York?
Yeah.
New Jersey. It should be in San Francisco, the new arena. That's what you were talking about, the Warriors arena.
Look, I've been dying to see an event in Miami, and look, Jorge is the BMF champ.
That would be cool.
Take it to home city. He's, you know, he's a 305, and I feel like something that's not talked about enough is that Miami has never had a fighter, like a big name. Like, Yoel Romero somewhat fits that story because, you know, he's obviously achieved a lot, but he, I feel like, is more of a Cuban fighter than he is a Miami guy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Masvidal grew up in Miami, so...
I would say Kimbo, but for higher success.
Right.
Yeah, more.
And it would come full circle starting to fight in backyards of Miami to actually like headlining an arena in Miami. I feel like that would be really nice.
Is that arena nice?
Yeah.
It is nice.
The Miami Heat.
Yeah, just traditionally, American they haven't Airlines had a lot of events in Miami because Miami is one of those markets that, like, there's so much.
Like San Diego,
there's just too much to do in the evenings. So people
there's a lot to do.
So people don't usually like go to events.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's other things to do and the weather's nice, so why would you be indoors?
Yeah.
But I actually think that this is something that would bring people out.
I think so too.
So we're in agreement. Next summer, rematch Miami.
So 2021.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, what, so we'll just plan it for summer?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's discuss Darren Till's move up to the middleweight division. It was an interesting one, and I think everybody was worried about him, right? It seems going up, I mean, against Kelvin Gastelum, people were advising him, like, look, this is not a good idea. Like, yeah, good idea to go up. Facing Kelvin Gastelum in your first fight, maybe not the greatest. Now that we've seen what happened, he got a victory, a split decision win. How'd you guys feel about his middleweight debut?
I actually thought he looked great at middleweight. Yeah. The only thing, my concern was, like, usually I like to give credit to the winner. But in this case, I did wonder why Kelvin seemed so reticent. He just seemed kind of like...
He was
lethargic.
Yeah. I don't know if that weight cut was really bad because he did not make weight.
I'm curious that... So.
But I think it's fine. Ow.
I see what you did there. So Darren Till had all these things happening to him throughout the fight week. The visa issues. I said he like injured his knee, so it was like the weight cut was rough. A lot of stuff was going on. He actually said he wanted to make up an excuse to pull out of the fight because he wasn't scared. He was terrified, and he landed what like 48 hours before the fight. Didn't do any media. Didn't do nothing. Kelvin didn't know if this fight was going to happen. So I have to wonder the closer it got to the fight if Kelvin was like, this isn't happening. Like they were at 72 hours before, he still wasn't there. Maybe he just mentally checked out, and then when he landed, it's just hard to get back into fight mode. Maybe that's why he missed weight, because he stopped taking it seriously. Because, like, if you're preparing for a fight, and the fight might not happen, like, it happened with Robert Whittaker. Like, the fight didn't happen, and I was like, they even weighed in and everything. So maybe he's just like, this is too much right now.
Yeah, especially for Kelvin, since he's kind of gone through that situation, you know. In some ways. And the other thing I was thinking about was you were saying, like, just not knowing whether the fight's going to happen. I remember Daniel Cormier saying that when he had to fight Anderson Silva instead.
He had a hard time.
He had a really hard time just getting the motivation back.
Right.
Because he was just like, I know I'm fighting a legend. I'm still getting to fight and all this stuff. But there's something, he had prepared so hard to fight Jon Jones. And just that mental, like.
You're thinking about another human.
The switching of the lanes.
Yeah. You're thinking about one person for like 11 weeks.
Yeah.
And then 72 hours before, they're like, nah, someone else.
Yeah. So for Kelvin and for Darren, both actually, they both had this kind of uncertainty. Like, is this going to happen? Is it not going to happen? You know, so that kind of just plays into your energy level as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I think that definitely affected the fight. So it's hard to, like, judge it. I don't think that Darren Till made a mistake in going up to Milway. I think
that's the best move for him.
Yeah.
Well, I think the mistake was, like, is that the right opponent?
Yeah, I think that's what people are really concerned about.
Well, no. Because, I mean, he's already fought for the welterweight title. They've already fast-tracked him. They've already decided that, you know... He should be at a certain level. I do feel they rushed him through that, but at the same time...
It's not his fault they rushed him.
Like, it's not his fault.
Everyone kept saying he made a mistake fighting Kelvin. I don't get that argument
because that's not his mistake.
They offered him a guy that just fought for... What, he's going to say no? And like, he beats this guy, now he's in the top five all of a sudden. There's no way he would turn that down. If anything, the coaches should be like, hey, man, like, take a step back. Yeah. But I don't blame Darren Till
whatsoever. I think that's also the promotion, because it's clear that they see something in Darren Till, right?
Yeah.
You're not gonna be a co-main event. You're not gonna be getting these type of spots if they don't believe in you.
Yeah.
And you know, we saw how Conor came up in the UFC, and it was certainly a much more. Don't get me wrong. Every time you step in the octagon, you're taking risks, but it was a much more careful approach. Whereas Darren Till was like, all right, 185, Kelvin Gastelum, where he just had the craziest fight with Israel Adesanya.
And then, but who did Darren Till lose to a welterweight? The champion, and then Jorge Masvidal, who is the fighter of the year. It's not like he's losing to bums.
But he also didn't lose those fights. He got
crushed. Right.
That's why when you see something like that, you go, okay, let's take a step back. Instead of fighting the top five, maybe the top 10.
Yeah, I still don't like this.
I didn't like the matchup.
And I felt like they dodged the bullet. The UFC and Darren Till, because I don't think that was the Kelvin Gastelum that we know and as a top tier middleweight. But that's the difference between champions and contenders. Like Demetrius, GSP, Anderson.
They don't have off nights.
They don't have, even John Jones, even his off nights, he still wins.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's kind of the difference. You know, Kelvin's not a champion. He's obviously a great fighter, an A-level fighter. He just...
hasn't been a champion.
But he has off nights, and that's a thing.
And something that's very interesting, and you were there with me, at the open workouts when Kelvin Gastelum did the scrum, I asked him about, like, look, Paulo Costa's out for a bit. If you beat Darren Till, the title fight be next for you? And he's like, yeah, and I think it would go differently because I didn't go into that fight with the right circumstances. And it was very seldom the way he threw that, and I'm like, wait a minute, what do you mean by the right circumstances? What was going on? And he's like, oh, some things, but that's all irrelevant now. It's a guy clearly that doesn't make excuses. So I wonder if he was 100% coming into this fight too, because as you said, he did not look like himself.
Yeah, he didn't.
We've seen these type of performances from him though when he fought Neil Magny in Mexico. Like, that was a 5-round fight, if I remember correctly. You forgot that fight even happened, right?
I know. Like, you told me about it. I'm like, what? They fought? Yeah,
that fight wasn't great, and it was in welterweight, and that was when Neil Magny had strung, like, 7 wins in a row before losing to Damian Maia. And, like, the one before Damian Maia was over Kelvin Gastelum. We've seen this before from Kelvin.
I feel in a couple, like, 3 years from now, we're going to go, you know, hey, you know, Till should fight Gastelum. We're like, you know, they already fought. I'm like, what? What do you remember from the fight?
I don't think we're going to forget it just because it was on a big card.
And
it was the Kelvin Gastelum, Neil Magny was on a Mexico City fight night, the same night Miguel Cotto fought Canelo Alvarez. Yeah. Like, do you remember who else was on that card?
What was the co-main for Conor Nate?
Conor Nate one was Misha, the first one was Misha Holly Holm. Before that, it was Corey Anderson.
That was a bad example.
It was Corey Anderson and crap, I forgot the guy's name. Chris Weidman's boy.
Yeah, you suck.
John Volante. Yeah.
And Darren Till's move up to 185. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I'm super excited for it because at 170, like, don't get me wrong, there are some fun matchups, but it seems it's very wrestling heavy. Like, if you look at the top, right, Kamaru Usman, right, Colby Covington, there's others as well. But if you look at 185, the people that are dominating 185 are strikers, right? The former champion, Robert Whittaker. Now we got Israel Adesanya, Paulo Costa, who's the next challenger.
They have a Cuban boogeyman just walking around.
That's the only outsider there.
Cuban boogeyman that doesn't use his wrestling.
Exactly.
Yeah, he doesn't actually, yeah.
So Darren Till, it's clear that he's a great striker. So I just think he's a perfect fit for the styles that populate 185.
It's definitely his division, and he'll, just like you had asked Kelvin earlier if he had felt like he was ready for middleweight, and at first he wasn't.
Yeah,
it takes some time, and Darren Till will get to that point. He's just trying not to over. He had mentioned that he was trying not to bulk up too much, so that he wouldn't make his cut too difficult. But I actually just think that this is just the trend that we're seeing now. People are moving up in weight and realizing that cutting less weight just makes them healthier for the fight.
And also, I think the judging has got a bit more sophisticated, and now we are actually seeing wrestlers who are just holding people not winning the round. Mm-hmm. And I think that's giving the smaller middleweights more, or I guess welterweights going up, it gives them more confidence to go up in weight now.
But let's talk about Corey Anderson. Dude, what a performance. Just completely destroyed Johnny Walker.
Okay, coming into it, what was your prediction? I predicted Walker first round KO. Yeah. I did. And not because I didn't believe in Corey Anderson, I just thought, style-wise, like Corey Anderson's a bit of a kind of a slow, grindy starter, and I thought it was like, oh, this is going to be great for Johnny Walker.
His chin hasn't held up in every single bout that he's been in. We've seen him get knocked out pretty bad.
Dead against Jimmy.
And Johnny Walker just happens to have a lot of power and be crazy. So I thought Corey Anderson was going to look good until he got knocked out by Johnny Walker. But boy, was I wrong.
What did you think coming into the fight?
Yeah, no, I had Walker on my card, that I was going to pick, but as I was getting closer and closer to the fight, and I just saw how fired up Corey Anderson was and how angry he was, I was like, oh.
Yeah, did you talk to him in media day?
No, we didn't get the chance.
We talked to him at that Dominance.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why we didn't talk to him.
That was the best interview soon as he was done, me and Casey were like, that was Corey Anderson, right?
Okay, and I have no issues. No, I know Corey's like, no one talks to me, no one believes in me. Yeah, we did it. I did it. Mm-hmm. Because we were there at the Dominance Media Day a couple weeks ago, and they got, there was like Gaslam there.
Gaslam. They had Marlon, Gaethje, and
Frankie Edgar, Garbrandt, all these guys. And we literally just saw Corey.
Just standing.
Someone's talking to him. We're like, well, we're here. I guess we might as well talk to him.
Might as well, yeah.
And so we talked to him. He's just like, fire. Oh, 50. I didn't decline 50 fights. That's like, fucking 50 bitches. He just dropped these lines. Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, he's like, his exact. And I apologize. I apologize for the language. If you don't like language, pause it now. But he was like, because we were at UFC 240 at that press conference. Dana White said Corey Anderson turned down 50 fights. And then, 4 days later, all of a sudden it's announced he's booked against Johnny Walker. And I said, was this a coincidence, or was he just trying to get you to fight Johnny Walker? And he goes, he just wants me to get me to fight Johnny Walker. And I didn't turn down 50 fights. That's like me coming back from summer camp and saying, I fucked 50 bitches. But in reality, I fucked the same one 49 times. And now it's the 50th. I turned Johnny Walker down 49 times. And now we're fighting the 50th time. So that's what he said. It was very aggressive and very angry. But that was the most.
He's an angry man.
And he turned it down simply because it was someone behind him. And every fighter wants to fight someone in front of you. And of course,
it's not only that it was behind him, but it's a dangerous guy that's behind him as well. Yeah.
He's like, the UFC wants me to lose. They're not, even if I win, they're not going to give me a title fight. And they want Johnny Walker to beat me. And then he's going to all of a sudden go from 11 to 5 and then fight the champion. So I know what they're trying to do right now.
I know that Corey Anderson is not a happy man as far as what's going on around him, as far as, he feels extremely disrespected by the media, the fans. I mean, he goes after fans on Twitter. Like, he's not afraid of
That dude posting pictures of bow hunting and people are arguing.
But I gotta say, this whole experience that he's been going through that's not really good and he feels very angry about, it's been so good for him.
Yeah.
It's fueled him. Like, we talk about, for example, Rory McDonald having that anger that's fueled him. Yeah, it's not a positive force, but boy, has it gotten him far.
But then he apologized.
But that's part of it, because it's someone that's conflicted, that's dealing with all this anger. But at the end of the day, he's at heart. I feel like he's a good guy.
Apologizing because his beef wasn't with Johnny Walker. His beef isn't with the other fighters. His beef is with the UFC.
With his situation, it's just someone that's really frustrated.
Yeah, I think he felt out bad just as a competitor to kind of the trash Johnny Walker. I think that's what it was more about. But I think, but that anger ain't gone. He ain't gonna, that.
Yeah.
But are you sold?
I'm sold.
Are you sold?
Actually,
John Jones Anderson has to happen. In my opinion.
Now I want to see it.
Because I can see that conflict. Yeah. I can see those them back and forth.
And also, I like the fact that John Jones is kind of dismissing him. I want to see it even more because it's like, all right, well, clearly they've been dismissing this guy and he's been proving everybody wrong. All right, let's see what's up.
And I think, and like, 2 days ago, I didn't think that was a competitive fight. The Corey Anderson I saw yesterday, dude, I don't know. That's a
he's turned a corner.
There's something different to his style, you know.
Remember the last time Dana White said a fighter wasn't a needle mover? Who fought and then he fought in the main event?
Yeah,
that same card.
So it seems we're all on board here with John Jones, Corey Anderson.
Right? I don't really care if it's Corey Anderson or Dominic Reyes. I like both.
I don't think it should be Reyes. I'm not.
I don't care which one.
I don't think it should be Reyes.
If you ask me what I would like, I would choose Corey Anderson.
I would choose Corey Anderson.
So would I. Corey Anderson is an older fighter. He's been putting a massive amount of work. So it kind of feels right that at this stage of his career, he gets the title shot. Whereas Reyes, he's done a lot to deserve the title shot, but I think he still has a little bit of maturity and a little bit more, as far as getting a little bit more experience.
And his biggest win.
I don't think the fans actually know who he is still.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his last fight, he's still beating unranked 205er.
Well, the other thing that actually I think really works as a star-making conflict is that fighters are finally realizing actually coming into conflict with the UFC and management has a tendency to bring your profile up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent point.
When people start to fight with Dana, like how Nate feuded with Dana and how Conor feuded with Dana, like that brings your profile
Covington.
Up. Covington.
Tito Ortiz.
That brings your profile up. Fighting with your boss is like the oldest.
Stone Cold. Like, look, who's the most popular wrestler of all time, professional wrestler of all time? Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
And that's all he did.
Is the oldest story, right? Yep. And it's something that everybody can identify with. And so I think that's what people are finally like, yeah, you guys have been totally
shocked. Say it as
they you could fucked him over.
Yeah.
You know, you treat Corey Anderson better. People are actually on his side now, and
hopefully he gets it because again, he's put in the work.
And it's a unique storyline. The problem with Reyes too, unfortunately, this is prize fighting, it's entertainment. There's no story on Reyes other than he's winning.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, is there a story on him?
No.
I mean, I like that he's an IT professional, but that's just because I'm
an that's how. Yeah.
That's true.
I was about to say.
That's how they're going
to
sell
it. But Corey,
Corey's got a story.
Corey's got a story.
They can sell it. So let's see if,
Someone else I quickly want to talk about, and I was super shocked to see his performance, Kevin Lee. My God, just destroying Gregor Gillespie, taking his undefeated record and just throwing it as far as he possibly could. Right there, perfect that reenactment. my God, he really needed this win, man. He really needed it because his back was against the wall and it almost felt like a lot of people were saying he was just hype. Like he talked his way into a title shot. This whole, I'm gonna challenge Khabib, it just seems so far away now. But then you see him going with Firas Ahabi, you see him having that kind of performance and you go, wait a minute, there could very well be another chapter to this guy's career.
Yeah, and people really discounted how important Robert Fallas was to his life.
Yeah.
And I really don't think...
his life, not just even his fighting.
Right, his life. People don't also... one of the factors people don't consider is your mental health. I mean, that had to have had a major impact on him. And of course it was going to take him time to recover. Of course it took him time to regroup. You know, he had to find his new camp. He had to find a new coach. He had to find a new mentor. So that's a lot to go through.
Yeah.
That knockout. Dude, great job in the UFC production with the little GoPro cam on all the announcers and Megan O'Leary doing her. And I think you see Mick Maynard just like.
Oh, I love Joe Rogan's reaction.
Yeah. He's just like. Yeah, Joe's like, wait, did this happen or the edibles just like really going hard? I don't know. And like, it was just like,
that was like the perfect photo for a meme of these edibles ain't shit 30 minutes later.
And then they kicked it.
Yeah.
And I love just like, it's like all the whole panel, like that was kind of like our reactions. You were one of those people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, oh my God, that knockout.
Beautiful.
That was my reaction too. Yeah.
Oh, you got a badass photo too.
Yeah.
Foot to the face.
Insert photo now.
Yeah. you are looking at a photo of Esther Lin, ladies and gentlemen, at this very moment.
Is that the best head kick knockout since Holly Holm over Ronda?
The left head kick, yeah. I think that one, the Shevchenko eye. One was obviously
one I was missing. Yeah, I knew something
there was
missing.
We talked about that on the post-fight show. We couldn't think.
And I was like, nothing comes to mind.
Yeah,
when freaking Valentina Shevchenko.
That's right up there as far as like, a high-level performance, against a top contender too. There have been good knockouts and kind of lower prelim fights, but as far as like, high-level fights, and especially in the storyline coming to that, because like, who saw, like, that was like, ooh, who's going to wrestling?
Yeah.
I was like, it might be like, I think Kevin Lee's going to take him down and get better top control, you know? Yeah, like, he'll win. Like,
when it's two wrestlers fighting, yeah, like, it's never about the wrestling.
All I can remember is yeah, when Max but like, fought.
Okay, you're completely right about that. But then it's not about the wrestling, but then it becomes about shitty striking and boring striker.
And it was,
that was not shitty or boring. That was super
they were
cool.
throwing heat for like that whole fight. Kevin Lee is a complete MMA fighter. Mm-hmm. I mean, he fought for a championship, interim championship against Tony Ferguson. Mm-hmm. Looked really. He looked great against Tony before he got submitted from the bottom, and he had like staff on his chest and all that stuff. And then he came up short to Iaquinta, but he beat the soul out of Edson Barboza, mm-hmm. which he said was kind of sad. The last time he heard Robert Fallis's voice in his head, and he was talking to himself during the fight. And I wanted to ask him, like, when did that end? But I didn't get the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, he fought for championship, and we're talking about like Johnny Walker and Darren Till getting kind of thrown into the deep end. But Greg Gillespie, who did he fight last? Yancy Medeiros?
Yeah.
Before that, it was like Vince Pichel. Like, Vince Pichel, that's how you pronounce the name. Like, those guys weren't ranked. And all of a sudden, they're throwing him against Kevin Lee, who has fought for a championship and beaten top contenders. And then Kevin Lee's like, there's levels to this.
But Gillespie was the actual favorite coming into this fight.
Which was weird to me coming in. Like, it just didn't make sense to me.
The thing was,
just because he's undefeated.
Yeah.
But that, and also, we saw the...
In dominating fashion.
And we saw a lot of holes in Kevin Lee's game when he fought RDA, when he fought Iaquinta. Like, his wrestling is good, but there was something there missing that he couldn't put together, and eventually he would gas out and cost him.
But the experience level is so much higher.
That's so much higher.
Yeah, and his competition level was so much higher.
His competition level was, like, it's not.
I mean,
but that's why you make the fight.
Lee was battle
tested. That's what the test was. That's what the test was, and the test was, and Lee won that test. You know, like, and I mean, it was, I loved this matchmaking. I loved like prospects versus Lee's a veteran, but a young veteran. You know, he's just
super
been around
young.
Yeah, he's still. He hasn't hit his prime, and we think he's like. Like the Corey Anderson. Like, we've seen him get knocked out, and those images stick in your head.
Yeah.
And that's it. Kind of, and it really messes up your analysis sometime of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think
your perspective, the entire fighter's career.
Do you think that those 4 minutes of their life that we saw, like, oh, that's the rest
him.
Of their career?
Yeah.
But it's not. It's
Everyone reinvents themselves. Like, look at Justin Gaethje, gets crushed back-to-back fights, and now he's absorbed less stripes in the last three fights than he has in the first round against Michael Johnson.
Yeah. Does Gillespie come back a better fighter?
Yeah, I mean,
are we going to see him in the top 10, top 5? Is he
I think when you look at his performances,
eventually maybe.
Eventually.
Well, not directly, but I mean like, you know,
yeah, I think so. I mean, he's such a good wrestler. All he has to do is clean up his striking maybe a little bit more and I think he could get there.
Look, and he's only now 11 fights in. That's nothing. And fighting in the UFC. I think he has what it takes to
this is
get
the first
to the top.
Time he's really been hurt. Yeah, hurt bad.
Yeah,
he's not like he was taking damage the other fights.
Did he even? I have to see the fight again. Did they even engage? Did they even clinch? Did they even like? Or was it strictly?
No, it was strictly.
Boxing.
He was
boxing.
Throwing some.
Yeah, they were throwing some heat.
That uppercut that he like he threw.
Kevin Lee got hit.
It's like, I really wonder why. I mean, I guess when. Gillespie, when he feels like, you know, speaking to the media, it'd be really interesting what the game plan was. Was he,
But that's Gregor's thing, is there is no game plan. Like, he will never, like, I've interviewed him before. I was at his fight against Vince Mitchell in Utica, and he will absolutely not talk about his opponents. He doesn't watch tape, and he doesn't care what they do. The coaches do it, and then the coaches get him ready, but he doesn't go in with a game plan whatsoever. Like, that is his thing. He won't even look at his opponents in the eye. He won't talk about him. He won't think about him. He just focuses on himself.
That was his thing last week.
What's
his thing gonna be coming forward? Because now everything's different. Well, now he's been on that side.
And we've seen he's someone that can make changes. I mean, for the majority of his career, he wasn't down to call anybody out. And all of a sudden, he's call out King and eating, dry Wheaties and all this. So he's a guy that can change. If he was able to change that, I'm sure he'll be more than willing to change his approach to adjust to whatever he needs to do.
I was talking to you at the media stare downs. When they squared off, I had not realized it would really be the first fighter that would kind of maybe poke Gregor Gillespie, like kind of antagonize him. Like, because everyone else, like, he just like stares at the floor and their opponents just like stare at his forehead. But like Kevin Lee would like get under and like when they turned to face the media, like Kevin Lee kept looking at him like, I had not realized that was really the first time Gregor Gillespie really had maybe an antagonist, and it was just weird to think about. Like, I'm like, yeah, he's a great fighter, but he's never had a rival like that.
on our last topic, crystals.
What would you like to know, Casey? There's a serious lack of fiber.
You guys want the cheesiest transition in the world? Do you want this cheesiest transition?
Go.
This crystal is heavy, so I think it is important to talk about the heavyweight division. I want to mix in, I want to mix in this topic. We've been talking about individual bouts. Let's mix in what happened at UFC 244 as far as heavyweights.
Oh, yeah.
The heavyweight division, for some time, it was a little bit of a dud. It seemed like all these old names were just getting recycled and we're getting, you know, rematches and trilogies. And we almost went to like four or five fights, right, with the same guys. But man, you got Gane, right, Cyril Gane coming up. Say what you want about Greg Hardy, but he's coming up as well. Jairzinho Rozenstruik destroying, Andrei Arlovski. Derek Lewis has had a reinvention with his knee surgery, and we clearly saw a much more improved Francis Ngannou also had a reinvention. All of a sudden, the heavyweight division, man, it is a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting because Moscow's coming up, so we'll get to see how Volkov does. And I feel like there was someone recently. I mean,
Volkov, he's right there too.
Yeah, Volkov's right there too. So yeah, no, it's been good to see people coming back into heavyweight, and it's nice to see Derek Lewis just kind of how being more in shape is helping him.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we saw him shoot for a takedown. When was the last time you saw him shoot for a takedown, right? And it seemed he just looked a lot more mobile. He looked to have a bigger gas tank. You mentioned an interesting stat. He threw 37 strikes.
37
all
strikes.
All of them were significant. Yeah.
Can you imagine? Like, if Derek Lewis looks at you, that's like, oh, that's a significant strike. You win that one.
Talk about Ivanov's chin, man. I tweeted something from the MMA Fighting account, like, Derek Lewis is hitting him with cinder blocks. And then, like, a minute later, I just replied on the thread again, because it was just like, dude, that guy's chin is ridiculous.
His eyes were bleeding at the end of the fight. Like, he had like pools of blood from his eyeballs. So he's also been stabbed in the back. So I wasn't surprised that Derek Lewis hitting him with like a fist the size of lunchboxes wouldn't put him away.
What do you think's next for Derek Lewis, man?
I mean, did they want to do the rematch with Francis Ngannou?
Honestly, I feel like that's a thing.
I feel bad for Francis. Like, he deserves a title shot.
Yeah, but he deserves it, but he doesn't want to wait. He's like, he wanted to fight in Moscow.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't mind that only because they need to run that back just so that people stop thinking that that was the worst fight ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That original fight, Lewis versus Ngannou, won maybe the worst heavyweight fight. At least a main event. Co-main event.
Yeah.
Oh man, but that was just like a series of like unfortunate events, you know.
Yes,
Francis basically having a mental breakdown coming out, and then Derek Lewis having a bad back and just like, all right, hope he doesn't hit me.
And
you know,
I think Francis wants to write that shit anyway because he lost. Like, people forget Francis lost that on the judges' scorecard. So if there's a fight he would want to run it back, I think that would be one just because he wants to erase that L. But Curtis Blaydes called out Derek Lewis. He's like, I'll fight, I'll take. He's like, you thought Daniel Cormier whipped that ass? Like, I'll do it faster. So Curtis Blaydes is, I don't even think you mentioned Curtis Blaydes when we were talking about the heavyweight division. He's uber impressive.
And it's interesting because I really do want to see that Francis Ngannou Derek Lewis fight because, as you mentioned, Francis Ngannou came in with a lot of issues that were just mentally, he just wasn't in the fight. And we knew that Derek Lewis had some back issues, but it looked like he was willing to engage and he was, I mean, a lot of hate was directed towards Francis Ngannou, not Derek Lewis from that performance. I feel like given where they are now, Ngannou with all the confidence in the world right now, and Derek Lewis with a nice, healthy knee and a good back, I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but fight.
But I think I want that fight to happen. I still think Derek Lewis is going to fight Greg Hardy next, regardless of the performance.
Win or lose.
I wouldn't mind seeing that.
He wants to fight that guy so bad. He was talking about fighting him before he was even in the UFC because you know Derek Lewis's history. And he wants to fight individuals who also have that history, but on the opposite side. He said that all that stuff about Travis Brown that kind of put him, that made him all popular. And so I think that fight will happen, win or lose. Because he said he would be paying attention to that fight, even if he's not awake. He said, if I'm awake and sober, I'll watch, but that probably won't be the case. but I'll go back and watch it because he wants to fight. He goes, what's his name? George Hardy? I'll fight that guy.
Yeah, I guess Volkov, Hardy, and the Stipe DC rematch. Has that been? Is that official?
It hasn't been official, but both fighters, I believe, said that that's what's next, and Dana said that's what's next. I don't think it has a date yet, but.
Yeah, when they got, yeah, that just.
Overeem still needs an opponent.
Overeem, yeah.
And Jairzinho told us in the scrum that he's down for that.
That sounds like it's coming on. It's coming on Overeem if he's going to accept that because. Yeah,
I think Overeem would take
that. That's a much different matchup than Walt Harris.
Yeah. I think Overeem would take that fight, though. He's a guy that's, even when he loses, he says he wants to get right back in because he just likes to compete. Mm-hmm. Who did he fight on the Beijing card?
Who?
Overeem. He was like the co-main. I was like, Sergi, I can't remember his last name.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the guy's UFC debut.
Yeah, and he had been killing it outside of the UFC. It seemed like this was it. Like, Overeem, it was nice meeting you. Here's your run as a contender. Russian next thing you know,
Overeem's
back.
I also think I read somewhere that that's the biggest disparity in fighter pay. Because Overeem made like $800,000 and Sergi made like
a Reebok fight kit.
Yeah. So, and it was in Beijing, so no one watched it. It was like the co-main event for Curtis Blaydes and Ngannou. So Overeem doesn't really have an issue taking it. He wanted to fight Francis Ngannou. When Francis Ngannou was on the still rising, he's like, I want to fight Francis next because that's the guy that everyone says is the next big thing. I want to test myself. He gets knocked out and he goes, fair play to him. I just want to fight again. And he did and he won.
Yeah.
So I think Overeem would take that fight just for the competition. Plus, both of them have they're like long kickboxing records. So lot of kickboxing record. I believe both of them have trained with Tyron Spong in the past. So the story's there. I'm down to watch a glory fight inside of an octagon. I'm down. Sign me up.
With tiny gloves.
Tiny gloves.
Overeem's gonna take it in a tiny octagon.
Maybe. Yeah. It just seems the heavier division is just a lot of fun right now. It kind of sucks for Francis Ngannou, but I mean, we have to see that trilogy fight. It just has to be booked, I think.
Yeah, actually, I think overall, I feel all the divisions are kind of like recovering from
stagnation.
Yeah, there was kind of like when Conor came in and kind of decided he was going to go for multiple belts and all this stuff, and like things just started like that kind of attitude bled into the other divisions. Yeah. So everything was just kind of slowing down. Yeah. And so now we're finally seeing things pick back up. And it's good.
It really makes you appreciate champions like Max Holloway and Jon Jones.
Yeah.
Who are like, I'll fight next man up. Yeah.
And Jon Jones?
Well, I'm saying the last few fighters
staying in their division and
not trying to bounce around.
Yeah.
Well, Jon Jones, I think the old Jon Jones, I think this new getting money, Jon Jones is slightly different, but.
I'm saying like his last three fights have all been against the number one contender at light heavyweight, like regardless of whether he'd make money. Like you think he was thinking about making money against Anthony Smith?
He's making money.
But now he wants super fights? Who knows?
Yeah, so someone else I want to talk about because we completely missed them on our post-fight show, even when we were like, oh, do you have anybody you'd like to highlight? Steven Wonderboy Thompson, he's back, right? What a vintage performance, you know, destroying Vicente Luque, who everybody thought that was going to be like the next guy. He could be, but just not yet.
To me, it wasn't a vintage performance. It was like almost a more aggressive, new, I don't want to say angry because I don't know if Stephen Wonderboy ever angry.
Going forward.
But it was like
angry and Stephen Thompson. Those two don't.
It's just
even how afterwards he was like, I was hoping to fight Masvidal or Diaz, so he could be the nice guy versus the mean guy.
I was just really impressed. It's like because I figure, you know, because his game is so very fast reflexes, fast twitch. You know. It's like he's 36. Eventually, he's
about to turn 37.
About to turn 37. I mean, he's Wonder Man. Just sounds weird. Gross one. I was like,
coming off a huge knockout loss, it just seemed like this was the decline for him. And he had those questions as well. He's like, because I asked him in the post fight press conference, I'm like, he said, you know, you start getting those questions like, am I slowing down? Do I still have it? And I'm like, well, how much was riding into this fight? Like. How much was riding into this fight as far as your future's concerned? And he's like, a lot. It just felt like he needed this win to show either I'm still here and I can put something together or, you know, his better days are over.
Yeah, it was impressive. Yeah. Also because I had picked Luque and he was on his way up. Luque's been just on a tear. And so I thought, well, this is time. But after like a couple seconds into the first round, I was like, Luque doesn't seem to know what to do, actually.
He seemed puzzled.
Yeah. So immediately I was like, this is changing. And it was really weird, actually, when people were questioning Stephen Thompson. Actually, I just wanted to bring this up because it confused me about him backing off.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tyron Woodley had already said in previous fights that when he was planning to fight Stephen Thompson, he realized that Stephen Thompson can't fight when your back is against the cage.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he backs up. Because he needs that. He needs a certain amount of distance, and he can't kick. He can't kick the fence, you know. So he actually doesn't really go that hard when your back is up against the fence.
Interesting.
And so it was weird how people were like, "Oh, why did you back up?" Like trying to accuse him of not trying to finish the fight or whatever. But it just seemed like Luque and maybe his coaches just didn't go back and look at how Tyron Woodley, just because maybe those fights weren't very exciting. So they're not exciting to study, but he definitely had the right idea on how to counter
that. That first fight was real exciting.
Yeah.
Woodley Thompson. That was the draw. I think it was the second one.
It was exciting towards the end.
Yeah.
But it was fighting night. One of the best.
You got caught in that guillotine and still popped out and finished the round on top.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it.
I mean, I didn't hate either fight either.
I appreciated the second fight.
Yeah. No, I actually didn't. Mm-hmm. I actually like the fights. From my perspective, I got enough photos, so I mean, I'm selfish. I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
Stephen Thompson looked really good. You were saying, like, there is the part of him that's a kind of vintage performance, but also the part of him that's definitely more aggressive.
Yeah.
It's better to see him this way, because he was a little too, what's the word? Lost it.
If you sing it,
do you need more coffee?
Here, hold on to the crystal. It might help. Rub it a little bit.
Okay. He just seemed really hesitant before.
Okay.
You know.
Give me that. All right. So, guys, it seems to me, and I could be wrong about this. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but after those two Tyron Woodley performances, especially the last one that was kind of boring, and you know he wasn't able to capture the welterweight title, there was a lot of Stephen Wonderboy Thompson fatigue as far as the title picture. Like once that was over, it's just like that dude's never getting a title shot again. That's what it felt like, especially when Tyron Woodley was the champion. Now that's changed, you know, the belt is in different hands. We've seen sort of this new version of Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Is there a possibility for him to make another run and actually fight for the belt again?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, and
not only as far as would it make sense in the rankings, but from fan interest, do you think that's there?
Fan interest is different because, it's about storylines. It's like
that's dictating a lot nowadays.
Yeah,
interest.
I think it depends. Jorge Masvidal wants the championship. Mm-hmm. I know Masvidal wants all of his losses back. Mm-hmm. So Masvidal's like, I want to fight. Damian Maia said he has two fights left, and Jorge Masvidal says he wants to be one of them. Like, who's calling out Damian Maia for one of his last two fights? The guy that won a BMF championship wants to fight Damian Maia.
He wants to win the belt and then defend it against Maia.
Yeah. Maia and Wonderboy fought. Am I forgetting?
No, that was asked at the post-fight press conference.
Wow, how those guys not fought? Yeah.
Exactly. To talk about drastic contrast. But, like, in terms of Damian, like, imagine.
Could be horrible or awesome.
Imagine.
Either or.
Imagine a timeline where Jorge Masvidal wins the BMF championship, and then he wins the welterweight championship, and then he fights Damian Maia, and then Damian Maia beats him again, wins the championship, and then just retires. Dana White would be like, this is. Dana White would have a heart attack.
He would.
He would.
I mean, I just have a I don't think that
if you
want
to
Maia,
speak past the rock, past the crystal.
Damian Maia, for him to get that first title shot against Tyron Woodley, it was not under the best circumstances. He didn't really get a big heads up, and it just felt very forced.
Damian Maia?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I would love to see him get another shot. I mean, if he gets a few more wins, but
three wins in a row, right?
He's clearly he's looking good, and that Ben Askren fight was good as well, so especially beating a guy with that big of a name. So we'll see what's next for him.
I can see Maia Wonderboy winner getting a title shot. By the time everything pans out.
We were talking a lot about this welterweight division.
And we were just talking about Masvidal versus Usman or Covington.
And one's talking about Leon Edwards. This guy's on the longest win streak outside of Kamaru Usman. And the only person
you
mention him, Leon Edwards versus Wonderboy Thompson.
Leon Edwards versus Tyron Woodley. Leon Edwards, Tyron Woodley.
I don't hate that as well.
I want that fight to happen because if Leon Edwards beats Tyron Woodley, he has to get a title shot.
Yeah.
Or as Jorge Masvidal? Colby Covington calls him like Leon Scott, which I think is hilarious.
You know what's crazy is that in so many ways, Leon Edwards is part of, part of this whole thing. I mean, UFC 244, right? Three Piece and the Soda, Mr. Hey. 305. He was a big piece of this whole puzzle.
He was
right
a there. Stepping stone to MMA Masvidal.
But nobody talks about him.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And because he just fought for the first time in the United States, didn't he? Or like in a long time?
What he last fought was against?
He beat RDA in San Antonio.
RDA in
before
San Antonio.
That, mm-hmm. didn't he fight Kamaru in the States? We have, I think
yeah,
it
and
was,
he, and, yeah,
and
yeah.
that was his last loss. Mm-hmm. So, left elbow Larry, as he calls himself.
Fans haven't got behind him.
It's yeah. because and he always because he mean, fought in the UK for so much. Fought
so did
early morning cards.
So did Till.
Do you feel like he almost has to take?
Well, I mean,
it's clear he. There, I mean, look, I respect every fighter that gets in the cage and you go about your business as how you want to go.
He needs
about
a Corey Anderson performance.
That's yeah. what I was just going to, not only Corey Anderson performance, but Corey Anderson attitude. Like, it feels.
He needs to get angrier.
It feels like, look, Corey Anderson was in the same situation where picking up wins, not getting attention, and all of a sudden he is. It yeah. almost feels like he has to do that, right? It sucks, but like.
Well, and honestly, he's going to have to sleep someone in yeah. a big fight. And like he dominated RDA, but. Do you remember anything from that fight? Mm-hmm. Like after, you know, a couple weeks go by, I remember he won. That's yeah. about it. Mm. And but I don't remember, you know, I don't remember like, you know, 10-8 hellacious beating. Not that it wasn't an awesome win, but it's just that's just the way it
Do
works.
You remember the press conference for that UFC London where Leon Edwards fought Gunnar Nelson? The whole press conference?
Is it the one where Masvidal was asking for the Wi-Fi code?
Yeah. Because the whole press conference, Leon Edwards and Darren Till were arguing the whole time, and no one asked Jorge Masvidal a question. And then we saw what happened. So like Leon Edwards has literally been right there the whole time, and he's just not getting his fair shake. It's kind mm-hmm. of it's a bummer that he's on this win streak, and the welterweight division all of a sudden has this like group of misfits that are all just like screaming at each other. Leon Edwards is like, hey, I have a bunch of wins.
But you gotta like I think Masvidal said too, like you gotta take it too. Like you gotta tell the UFC, fly me out to New York, get me in front of the cameras, yeah. put me ringside cage side. When that fight happens, I'm standing up going, no, me next. Yeah, you know? Exactly. It's like, I mean, I hate to say it, like if it's out of character, it might be out of character, yeah. but like Henry Cejudo kind of admitted that. He's like, okay, I'm just going to be a fool, and that's what mm-hmm. people want to see.
I think what
Leon... And even if the UFC doesn't do that for him, look what Jimmy Manuwa did when... Who was the fighting? It was Daniel Cormier versus...
Anthony Johnson.
Like, he's like, I got to take matters into my own hands. And the wins weren't there for him to get that, but nonetheless, I remember... I mean, I'm talking about it right now. I remember there was an image, even...
DC and Jimmy were yelling at
DC each other. Were yelling at each other and made fun of him for coming in like a tracksuit, right?
Yeah. And you know what Daniel Cormier said? He goes, Jimmy, I love you, but you just beat Corey Anderson. That's what Ooh. Daniel Cormier Those are, that's exactly, goes, you just, he's like, I like Corey, but you just beat Corey Anderson. Yeah. And now look where we're at.
Someone else that comes to mind, Ryan Bader, you know, not the most exciting performances, but as soon as he got on DC's face at that press conference and he had to get carried out, it made headlines, it made news, and it got his name, you know, in the mix. Then he ended up going to Bellator.
I think what Leon Edwards has going for him is, do you remember the first guest fighter scrum that Jorge Masvidal did? Was at UFC Uruguay, and Guy was there, and we have that scrum, and he goes, I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'm going to erase that fool from the existence of the earth. Like, that's what Jorge Masvidal said about Leon Edwards. So if the beef is there and you want a storyline, Jorge Masvidal goes, it might not be next, but I'm gonna kill that guy.
It seemed that fight, for like a split second, you mentioned Masvidal was kind of mentioning his name. You go, okay, well, do we have something here? But now it just seems so far away.
Right? I thought that was gonna be the, for sure, if Kamaru fought Colby in New York City, I thought for sure Jorge Masvidal was gonna be the co-main event. And then Nate Diaz was like, I'm fighting Jorge Masvidal. Yeah. I was like, well, forget the Leon Edwards fight. Inject that fight into my veins.
Yeah, it was just too easy for him to get passed over in that case. Yeah,
there's no outcry.
There was a point when that seemed like the logical next step, but in the same way that Nate doesn't want to make other people famous, I think Masvidal realized, he's like, wait, I've got more shine right now. Well, I'm 100%. Lending it.
Leon Edwards. Every single interview, he refuses. He calls the fool with the MAGA hat, the guy that wears the weird African clothing, right? From Africa.
The guy with the curly hair.
He does not mention anybody by name and warns the media before the scrums.
Yeah.
Do not bring anybody up, because he knows the moment he inserts a name, people are going to start Googling, oh wait, who is Ben Askren? Who is so-and-so? And not only that, but the media runs headlines. Oh, what do you think about this guy? This guy sucks, this and that. Next thing you know,
Yeah.
And, you know, then there's buzz for a fight.
Yeah. And he did that at 241. He came back and warned everybody. And he pointed at specific reporters. He goes, don't ask this or I'm gone. Don't ruin it for your
friends. Well, he'll break your camera and, yeah. He's like, and glide out.
He's like, don't ruin this for your coworkers. First question. Yeah. People all are right. Like, oh.
It's crazy. It's all comes back full circle to the main event. Crazy week.
What did Sean once say? Life, time is indeed a flat circle.
Last thing before we go, I want to ask you is because at this point, you guys are basically like historians because you guys have experienced so much in so many events. Something that's not being talked about enough is that for the first time, we saw a belt that's not the real world title. And I feel like because it was so much fun, it's kind of being forgotten, but it's unprecedented and it could very well set not some ugly trends in the future, but it could be problematic, right? Or do you see it that way? Or what? Or would this be just like a little point in time that this just happened and it will have no repercussions moving forward?
No, I don't know if they're gonna, something else will happen. It's gonna be similar to this,
I feel like the UFC low-key had something in mind because even they put one of one on the belt, you know? Like
they were worried that people would demand this be defended and that kind of stuff. So I think that actually they kind of stopped that.
By saying just, one of one?
No.
This will show them.
It's there.
They always, it's so funny, they're always worried about being compared to boxing, but then that's what they did for
Maymac.
The money belt thing.
But the difference there is that was on boxing's terms. This is on MMA.
Yeah, so it does feel weird that they did it, but I actually don't think it's going to set off any kind of, only because I can only imagine Masvidal and Nate Diaz competing for. I know we had a big discussion this week about who else would be considered a BMF or bad motherfucker, but also I think that it doesn't really, it's weird because people are like, oh, how can you be a bad motherfucker if you've lost half your fights or whatever? I was like, but that's part of it.
That's part of it, man.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
And there isn't going to be those kinds of characters anymore. I remember Ben Folks once wrote a thing about how we're going to miss Nick and Nate Diaz when they're gone.
Yeah.
And we are. Because there isn't going to be that same kind of honesty in media, the way they talk to us. The fact that they just kind of say whatever they want. Yeah. They just tell us.
And that's feelings. Them. That's not a character.
Right. It's them. It's not a character. And that's why this belt was for that. Because you wouldn't be able to give that kind of title to anybody else. And I don't actually think that this is going to set anything else off. But I could be wrong.
You know what it's going to do? Jorge Masvidal's already, since he's won, is using hashtag one of one. Hmm. That's all he's been using.
I've seen Jeremy Stevens been calling out for he wants to fight that belt. Mike Perry really liked the idea of fighting that for that belt.
So pro wrestling.
Yeah.
So pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And you he's MMA fans, you gotta, you guys are pro wrestling fans, you have no idea. You just don't even know.
You're telling me The Rock putting a fake belt around someone is pro wrestling?
Oh.
Get out of here. Yeah. He even had
Dana even said at the presser, he goes, Johnny Walker got a pop.
Yeah.
He got a big pop. Yeah. I was like, oh, but he's like, oh, but Corey Anderson, he went over.
The Rock got this full entrance too. You guys weren't in the arena, right? Oh my God. Like he came out and
was that the loudest it got for the whole night? Or
that's a good question.
It was up there.
It was legit.
He also like, cause when The Rock, I've seen The Rock wrestle like way too many times in my life. When he walks out, there's like specific lighting and color, and they have like a camera that like comes down on like, I don't know what, I'm not a camera person, but it comes down on like a crane, and then it like zooms out and then like rotates at an angle and then comes back at him. They did all of that.
Ah.
They did all, like showed it on the Jumbotron. It was, the lights were the same, the music was the same, they had lightning on the Jumbotron, and then like he stops and lifts the belt up, and all of a sudden I'm like, they're gonna do that camera thing. And he's like, and it like zooms in. I was like, whoa, they went all out for this one. Awesome.
What a bizarre night.
Yeah.
Epic night.
All right, well, I think that does it for us here. We wanna connect powers. We got through UFC 244. It was a wild week, but we got through it.
And Jairzinho's now on Team Crystal, by the way. We didn't talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
Makwan Amerikani suffered a loss. Also Team Crystal. How do you feel about that?
I mean, he was clearly not enough pyrite around him.
Maybe needed
Yeah.
Bigger stone, yeah.
Yeah, bigger stone.
Bigger stones for
him. He needs to link up with Jared Cannonier, man. Jared Cannonier is Captain Crystal.
Yeah. Maybe unlock some of the powers to the universe.
Let's wrap this out, but one last thing. Speaking of Jared Cannonier, UFC, start using the damn hoop. At the weigh-ins.
For real?
At the weigh-ins. Yeah. Use the damn hoop at the weigh-ins. I saw way too much weight cut penis. Way too much.
I was sitting behind you, and I just saw you go,
yeah, the whole trimester.
Dude, Jared Cannonier didn't give a fuck. He was just...
And then he did an interview with the Submission Radio lads, and they were like, do you think they should have used the hoop? He goes, they had a hoop? And they were like, yeah. He goes, I don't give a fuck about that.
They used the entire hoop all morning.
They used it.
Except for Kelvin and Jared.
Kelvin, jeez.
And both of those guys did not care. It was like, there's so many
By the way.
These are all live. All of these cameras
are
live. If
the New York State Athletic Commission would have used the hoop on Kelvin Gastelum, we might have not seen Kelvin Gastelum versus Darren Till.
That fight still
would have happened. Because how do you lean on the hoop?
Or you move him this way, but yeah, it would have been different. The storyline would have been different.
Yeah.
The storyline definitely been different.
Yeah. All right, well.
Now, sorry, I had to talk about weight cut penis, sorry.
Yeah. With that being said, thank you for tuning in to Coffee Talk, UFC 244 edition, #use the hoop.